Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
In about a week and a half, I kick off my week-long tour of several cities in the South, and I'd love a chance to see you in New Orleans on May the 20th. The next day, it's Jackson, Mississippi, followed by Memphis, Tennessee, Springfield, and Fort Smith. If you want to find out more, it's thethinkingatheist.com/events. Now, Jackson contacted me. The folks at the Mississippi Humanist Association said that the place sold out. It's not a paid ticket. It's RSVP, but it filled up. No seats left for the 2 p.m. event on Sunday the 21st. But never fear, because demand has been so high, they actually are changing venues to a new location just down the street with double the capacity, but they still are asking everyone to RSVP. Anyway, for Jackson and all the cities on that tour, everything you need to know is at thethinkingatheist.com/events. So log on and check it out. Coming up next week, I'm doing a show topic that I may come to regret. I may wish we'd never talked about it. But it's called When to Punch a Nazi. Now, this controversy started a long, long time ago, but it reignited in the month of January. There was a guy named Richard Spencer, white supremacist. He's on camera doing an interview about whatever racist swill he's, you know, about at the moment. And during the interview on camera, somebody decks him. Somebody just hauls off and punches him in the face. And I watched as the internet divided on whether or not this was appropriate. Some people were saying, why would we reduce ourselves to this? You know, why resort to physical violence over mere words, even the worst of words? And then there's a whole other culture, people that say, he's a Nazi. If anybody had it coming, he did. I'd punch him too. Hell, I love watching the video where he gets punched. I find it cathartic. I think it's justice. So the show is called When to Punch a Nazi, a conversation about free speech. We're going to talk about the responses to the best and worst of speech in a free speech culture. We're going to reveal the opinions of people on both sides. And if you want to participate, the email is podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be speaking with a woman named Andrea Garrigan. Now, Andrea used to be a hardcore Pentecostal Jesus-loving Christian until, like so many of us, she looked around and realized it was all a bunch of crap. But her fascination with the Bible continued. And specifically, she spent like the last 10 years nose down, just really immersed in the Old Testament, in the original Hebrew, getting into the original words and meanings of words. And she has discovered some stuff specifically about the biblical Satan that I thought this audience would find very interesting. Because I was doing some research and homework on Satan myself for a project I was working on. What if modern Christian tradition has gotten Satan totally wrong? What if they have misinterpreted and misunderstood what the Bible actually said about Satan, Beelzebub, Lucifer, the devil? And what if these aren't even necessarily the same character? Well, Andrea Garrigan has a perspective on this that I thought you might enjoy. I'm going to talk to her in 2 weeks on a broadcast called The Devil You Don't Know. I'd like for Christians to be exposed to the broadcast. I don't know if they'd accept what they were hearing, but if nothing else, it allows us to hear Andrea's perspective. She can tell us what she has learned, and then we can use that as perhaps the first step in our own reexamination of the biblical Satan. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Lawrence Krauss is on the docket near the end of the month. Lots of good stuff coming up on the radio show. Now, today's broadcast is a conversation with Steve Boffman. He's got a YouTube channel. He's known as the Friendly Banjo Atheist. And over the course of years, Steve Boffman has been following the story of a popular Christian evangelist and apologist named Ravi Zacharias. You know, when I was a Christian fundamentalist, we used to hear the names tossed around of these authority figures, you know, those who could help us discern and better understand the Word of God. And it was, you know, Chuck Swindoll, and it was James Dobson, Kenneth Copeland, John MacArthur. One of the names we'd often hear out there was Ravi Zacharias. He's an author, he's a broadcaster, he's the founder of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Now, Ravi's story goes something like this. He was an atheist until his late teens, and then a traumatic event caused him to find Jesus, right? He allegedly attempted suicide, and after that, he found a new way of living in Jesus Christ, and he began his ministry as an evangelist back in the early 1970s. He has been called by Christian leader Chuck Colson the greatest apologist of our time, and he makes some pretty grand claims about his own education and qualifications. But Steve Boffman actually started some fact-checking to see if Ravi's claims were rooted in the facts. Do Ravi Zacharias's credentials or alleged credentials check out? And you'll be amazed, but probably not too surprised at what Steve Boffman has found out. And so as such, Steve is my guest on the show today. There's video of this conversation. If you want to watch the YouTube version, you can click the YouTube link in the description box of this show. But Steve Boffman, the Friendly Banjo Atheist, joins me here, and it's great to have you, man.
Thank you for having me, Seth.
So where did this fascination with Ravi come from? Were you a fundamentalist yourself? Were you one of those people who used to put money in his offering plate or what?
Not quite, but it's interesting hearing you talk about your upbringing around evangelists. I had a similar upbringing, but at a different part of the world. I was born in the Caribbean, and when I was about 3 years old, we moved to Southeast Asia and spent a lot of time growing up around missionaries. So I was very attracted to the faith right from a very early age. The missionaries were the good folks. They were probably the purest kinds of Christians you can imagine. They weren't really doing the money-raising thing. They were out there living in the villages and making real sacrifices for their faith, and I admired them greatly. The problem I had was that I could never quite bring myself to believe their message, no matter how hard I tried. And I tried very, very hard. But even though I'm now have given up any religious faith that I once had, I'm still really interested in the smart evangelists, not the TV charlatans who are just so transparently phony, but the real deal, the folks with the advanced degrees and the folks who seem to really have their science and their philosophy down. And that's what got me interested in Ravi Zacharias, because he presents himself as a highly educated individual. He repeatedly makes reference to his Cambridge credentials, to having been at Oxford. He calls himself doctor. His publicity materials refer to him as having multiple doctorates. And so I thought, this guy is one smart dude, and I want to look into his claims, because if anybody has a handle on the latest state of objective truth, whatever that may be, he seems like one of those kinds of people. Of course, I investigated and I found that he was really quite a charlatan, but in a very interesting way, because he's a charlatan who's able to fool the really smart folks. One of the interesting things about Ravi is that his audiences tend to be college-educated folks. And he really does a fantastic job of sounding like he's got the philosophy, the theology, and the science down. And it's really an interesting and very depressing exercise in learning how easy it is to dupe intelligent people.
We were doing a show recently with Christopher Hitchens' Soundbites, and he was talking about there are so many people who just seem wired to want to follow. Right. Show me someone strong and charismatic who presents well, who tells me something with confidence. They sound authoritative. I'll follow that. I'll follow these people. There's a human tendency so often for these people to want to attach themselves to a Ravi Zacharias. And so it's rare that I stop and focus on one apologist. I say it's rare. It's somewhat rare. We'll talk about Ray Comfort. And we did a whole show reviewing his film, The Atheist Movie, which was just a travesty. Ken Ham, we've done whole shows on his work at the Ark Encounter and what the state of Kentucky is up against and all these taxpayer incentives. We've talked about the Hovens, you know, Kent Hovind coming out of prison. And of course, Kent Hovind got his quote unquote advanced degree at what appears to be like a mobile home, you know, a shack out somewhere, a completely unaccredited organization that gave. Yeah. Look, I used to be wired in when I was a believer with a guy who was a doctor. You know, he had a doctorate, but was an honorary doctorate given to him essentially by his church, a church that he had personal ties to. And so we get into these people who become what Dr. Donald Prothero calls credential mongers, where mm-hmm. they throw the PhD out first, or they throw out the doctorate or whatever, and that is supposed to automatically begin winning the argument. And we look at Ravi Zacharias. There are some questions about his qualifications, and I want to go deeper. So talk to me, Steve. What are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about a guy who, first of all, comes across as having multiple doctorates. He does not disclose that those doctorates are honorary. And it's fascinating to me that he actually gets away with this. It took me hours of online research and emails back and forth to finally figure out that he doesn't have any doctorates. His highest degree is actually a non-academic Master of Divinity degree. But yet when you go online, you can see his followers talking about him having PhDs and having him, and how he has these fantastic academic qualifications. Ravi Zacharias doesn't disclose that his doctorates are all honorary. But what's very interesting is after I went public with this for the first time, he reduced the number of references in his website to himself as Dr. Zacharias from 9 to 4. So something got him feeling a little bit guilty about referring to himself repeatedly as Dr. Zacharias, but not enough to stop doing it. He just went and reduced the number of references. He started calling him Dr. Zacharias at his website bio less. He also added the word honorary to his doctorates for a few weeks and then recently removed it. So it's interesting to me to see how going public about how he really doesn't have any doctorates and they're all honorary somehow triggered some action on his part, or at least the part of those who are running his ministry website, getting them to back off on the claim slightly, but then go back to making the claim full on, which is just interesting. I mean, what's going on? Why cannot they just add the word honorary to his doctorates?
Well, let me stop you there for just a second, Steve. So are you sending emails to him? Are you pursuing him at, you know, is he doing evangelism in your town and you show up? Because I know we have some activists who they'll go up to politicians and ask some necessary questions, some pointed questions, and often there's some squirming going on. You know, have you had dialogue with Ravi Zacharias? What's the nature of your sort of pursuit of these facts?
I've had no direct dialogue with him. I've had extensive dialogue with his ministry. When I was first investigating Ravi, because I smelt a rat, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, but I contacted his ministry to ask about whether he'd actually been a visiting scholar at Cambridge and why he didn't disclose that his doctorates were honorary. And his ministry was extremely cooperative with me. Lovely folks, answered my questions, treated me respectfully. I've got pages and pages of emails with him. But when I learned that the Cambridge University claim was bogus, in other words, Cambridge wrote me and said, in effect, Ravi Zacharias was never a visiting scholar at our university. Once I presented that to Ravi's ministry, I never received any response from them after that. They dropped me like a hot potato. And I've sent countless emails to them since then, asking for interviews with Mr. Zacharias, asking for clarification on these claims he's made, and they do not reply.
Okay, well, let's camp out here, Steve, for just a second. There's a video link that you had shared with me earlier that I think he drops the Cambridge reference a few times and talks about his is it education or experience in quantum physics?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, it's a double whammy. You got Cambridge and you got somebody who's an expert in the quantum.
What I learned was Ravi claimed, makes a big claim, and it's probably the most impressive claim in his very, very sparse academic resume, that he was a visiting scholar at Cambridge University. And in his autobiography, he says he was there in 1990 as a visiting scholar. Well, I contacted Cambridge, and what I learned was that Ravi Zacharias had actually done a sabbatical at a small church school called Ridley Hall, which is in the town of Cambridge, right there with Cambridge University, but what is not a constituent part of Cambridge University. And while he was at Ridley Hall, he went over to Cambridge and sat in on some classes. And he did this for 2 to 3 months. And based on that, he claims to have been a visiting scholar at Cambridge University, which is just bogus. And Cambridge said so. Cambridge told me that what Ravi Zacharias did being on sabbatical at Ridley and taking classes or sitting in on classes at Cambridge does not make him a visiting scholar at our university. After I informed Ravi of this, not only did they drop all communication with me, but they actually removed the bogus claim from their website. And it now says something more truthful, which is that he was a visiting scholar at a place called Ridley Hall. But it's fascinating that for however many years it was, this was back in 1990, he's gotten away with making that very impressive and very false claim.
Now, we're not talking about a culture that's hugely interested in fact-checking. I mean, the church is not a fact-checking culture, right? I mean, with exceptions, I want to be fair, there are a lot of reasonable believers out there. I think, obviously, they're looking through God glasses, but they do want to know the truth. They would want to know if he's bogus. They wouldn't want to be taken advantage of in any way. But, you know, this guy's been skating on bogus credentials then for a matter of decades, and there's no public statement. The information just sort of changes and or disappears on his public forum. Is that right?
Yes, there's been no public statement. I don't know if he's mentioned it, if he's been asked about it by people in his audience, in his audiences, but there's been no public written statement by the Zacharias Ministry about the allegations. Back to the Cambridge thing, in addition to saying that he was a visiting scholar at Cambridge, he's made the claim frequently and loudly that he studied quantum physics with John Polkinghorne, who was once a very well-known quantum physicist at Cambridge. And Ravi Zacharias makes the claim that he was studying quantum physics at Cambridge with Dr. Polkinghorne. And I contacted Cambridge, and I learned that Dr. Polkinghorne had retired from physics, from the physics department, from the science department, 11 years earlier, and was now teaching divinity when Ravi Zacharias was there at 1990. So there's no way Mr. Zacharias could have been studying quantum physics with Dr. Polkinghorne, because Polkinghorne wasn't even teaching physics at that point. And, you know, you're right. The church doesn't want to fact check. Unfortunately, atheists don't really want to fact check. We make our share of bogus claims about, you know, the Gospels being fourth century documents or something. I mean, we're capable of our whoppers as well. But it's just depressing that when something that is so blatantly and objectively false, and that's easy enough to establish with a few emails, is shown to be false, the believers keep believing. And even his closest followers, the people who are part of his ministry, some of them are of whom are fairly decent scholars themselves, they keep going. They keep the faith, not just in their religion, but in their leader. And that's, I think, one of the most troubling parts of the Ravi Zacharias story. The scholars who were part of Ravi Zacharias International Ministry and his other ministries stay true to the great leader. And it's very North Korea-like.
What's his sphere of influence? I mean, you know, I know Benny Hinn's under investigation. You know, right now there's, you know, they're looking into his finances. We'll see people who are at the forefront of evangelism, televangelism, whatever. And for a number of reasons, they'll find themselves on the wrong end of a headline somewhere as an investigation takes place. But, I mean, is he world famous? Does he fill up halls with hundreds or thousands? How big is Ravi Zacharias these days?
He is very big. He has a weekly radio show that's broadcast on over 2,000 outlets worldwide. He has offices in India, in Europe, in Latin America, in Hong Kong, in Singapore. He fills halls. It's hard to get in to see him sometimes, even in large halls, because he's really, really got the charm. He's got the charisma. He's a tremendous showman. Fantastic master of stagecraft. And if you're a Christian doubting your faith and you don't really care too much about letting the facts get in the way, he's got the medicine to make you feel really, really good. And that's what he does. And people love it.
Steve, it's interesting. You know, the quantum is one of those things that's often invoked by those who are seeking to sound lofty and to talk about highly scientific things, and it's so misunderstood. It's so difficult to wrap our heads around it. BeliefNet did an article a while back speaking about how the quantum proved the existence of God. And of course, anyone who was browsing casually within the church would have been just blown away and probably would have immediately forwarded the article to 50 friends. Check this out. It's proof. And of course, if you read the article and you vet the claims, it all came down to a faith claim anyway, right? We don't yet understand the quantum. Therefore, by faith, we know the Bible is true. It was a huge, huge leap. And it's interesting to see somebody like Ravi Zacharias sort of using the quantum. He's using this sort of powerhouse scientific term to impress the masses and build his own credibility when the truth is he's misrepresenting what it is. I'd much rather hear from a quantum physicist, wouldn't you?
Yes, and one of Ravi Zacharias' standard stage moves is to quote quantum physicists. And he's doing this in a way that grossly oversimplifies the issues, and the audiences don't care. His references to quantum demonstrate that he doesn't know anything about it because he doesn't talk about it himself. He simply quote, he pulls out his iPhone and he quotes from authorities. But one of the interesting things, Seth, about this, and there's a video that I'd love to have your viewers, people who really are interested in watching Ravi Zacharias, all of his tricks in 1 6-minute video. He refers to a guy named David Berlinski as one of the world's leading quantum, as one of the world's leading physicists. And then he quotes from the gentleman. And it turns out Berlinski's not even a physicist at all, much less one of the world's leading physicists. And this is an astonishing ploy that he gets away with. Did none of the people in the audience bother to Google David Berlinski and find out that Ravi's just lying about this guy in front of a large audience of people who are university students and maybe grad students and maybe professors? He can get away with saying these sorts of things without his audiences calling him on it. And it's just an astonishing phenomenon to me.
Is that your take on him? You think he's just a liar? You think he's filling his pockets? I mean, it's hard to know what's going on in his mind, but we can often learn about people by their tactics and how they respond to correction. What's your take?
I am always reluctant to psychologize people because, first of all, psychology is not a real precise science, and I'm not well trained in it anyway. But here's what I think is going on with Ravi Zacharias, and this comes out very clearly in his autobiography, which is called Walking – let me see if I have the title right here Walking from East to West. When Ravi Zacharias was a young man, a teenager, he was very, very troubled. He was not able to get the success in life that his siblings had, that his buddies had. He had a very troubled relationship with his father. And one day, as a young man, he tried to commit suicide. And fortunately, the suicide failed. He was taken to the hospital and his life was saved. And shortly after that, he discovered religion, and he discovered that he was a good speaker. And he began speaking about the gospel, and he makes this very clear in his autobiography that he just loved the exhilaration of having crowds of people gather around him asking him questions and thanking him for his powerful message and complimenting him and telling him that God had great things for him. So I really think what's going on with Ravi Zacharias is not so much that he's just a wanton liar, but that he so desperately needs the adulation of audiences as a drug to stave off depression. He says in his autobiography many, many times how exhilarating it was to have these audiences come up afterwards and tell him how wonderful it was. So I think religion is the drug that keeps him feeling popular, that keeps him feeling competent, and if he has to throw in a few lies here and there to get that, to keep that going, so be it. It's a price worth paying.
Do you have a website or resource? Do people follow you or work on a page or whatnot? I will link, obviously, the you'd mentioned videos, the 6-minute video and some others. I'm going to provide some links in the description box because I want our listeners and viewers to be able to go deeper and to check all of these out. But is there a hub for information so they can sort of join the investigation or at least watch as it happens?
Yes, I have a website called RaviWatch.com. That's R-A-V-I Watch, W-A-T-C-H.com.
He has to just lose sleep at night knowing there's the website out there with his name in it dedicated to observing and analyzing the names and claims that he makes. I mean, again, who knows what he's really thinking, but Ravi Watch is just awesome.
Well, thank you, Seth. I'd like to think he's losing sleep over it, but I just don't know. It's hard to know how much impact this is making simply because most of the emails I get are from his followers, and they're telling me that either my facts are wrong, that Ravi would never do that, or they're telling me that even if my facts are wrong, he's a powerful tool of the Lord who I should listen to and stop trying to tear down. So the depressing thing about my almost 2 years of investigating Ravi Zacharias and trying to get the word out about him is that the folks who I think should be caring about this, like his followers, don't really seem to be overly bothered by the fact that we've caught him with blatant lies and misrepresentations about his credentials.
You know, Ken Ham had a big rant the other day. He's upset that the atheists are, you know, always antagonizing, always questioning, always bothering and whatnot. And he was really, really irritated. And I think I had retweeted, and I'm like, you know, Ken Ham's essentially asking the wrong question. The question isn't, why are the atheists causing so much trouble for me? The question is, why should facts matter? And the facts do matter, right? And believers and non-believers alike should care if someone is saying something that is factually untrue.
Absolutely. And what is with this focusing on the messenger and ignoring the message? It's a diversionary tactic. I think I understand it. Folks who are deeply attached to their religion, as you well know, Seth, don't really want to have it challenged too much. And it's so much easier to just say bad things about the person delivering the bad news. Attack the messenger when the message is really inconvenient. And we see that. I'm seeing that so much in my Ravi Zacharias work.
You just hate God, Steve. You're just angry. You're malcontent. You're a sad, sad atheist. And I'll pray for you. I will.
Well, you know, it's funny that you're saying that right now, because about an hour and a half ago, someone posted something at one of my Ravi Zacharias videos saying pretty much that exact same thing, asking me, do I hate God? And I just replied that, well, it's really hard for an atheist to hate God because, obvious reasons. But yeah, it's hard for people. And I do encourage atheists to be sympathetic to, I mean, like Sam Harris points out, these folks, a lot of them are in quite a bit of pain. I remember when I left my faith, my very deeply beloved faith, around age 20, it was a painful process, and I would not have responded well to an atheist sort of saying, yeah, 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 I told you so. I would have responded much better to compassion from atheists or from skeptics who really sympathize with the fact that I'm suffering because I'm giving up something that I really, really did love. And there's something beautiful about religion, the rituals, the music, the community, and to give give up the dogma means you have to give up a lot of that stuff too, and it is a very painful process. So I'm sympathetic with some of the irrational Ravi supporters who make these really desperate diversionary arguments. But on the other hand, I have to say, look, you're a grown up. If you care about truth, sometimes it's a painful thing to have to accept.
We'd rather
and deal
live
with it.
A hard reality than a happy fantasy, right?
So. Well put. I like that.
All right. I'm going to put links to the website and the YouTube videos in the description box again so that people can go and check it out. And I would encourage them to sort of let's spread the word and help keep this gentleman accountable. Now, if you're going to make a claim, it's not too much to ask that you back up the claim, that you verify the claim. I think it helps everyone, believer and non-believer alike. If we find some falsehood that's being perpetuated from the stage or from a website or elsewhere, and we vet the claim to make sure that it's true, and if it's not, we expose it for what it is. And I think the work you're doing is important, Steve. Any final thoughts on Ravi Zacharias or anything else before we wrap it up?
Yes, thanks, Seth. One of the things I encourage skeptics and Christians alike to do is we need to contact Ravi Zacharias at pr@rzim.org. His email goes straight to his public relations manager, and we need to be asking him to publicly respond to these allegations. So I have a video called Ravi Zacharias and Quantum Physics. And it's just a 3-minute video that summarizes one of his claims. And in the text field, there's a letter that I'm asking people to copy and paste and send to his ministry. Edit it any way you want. But the bottom line is we need to let them know that the word is out that Ravi Zacharias is a fraud when it comes to his credentials, and we need him to address these things publicly. Their strategy is to ignore all complaints, at least publicly, and hope that eventually the problem goes away. And I'm not going to let it go away, but I really need the help from other people who are concerned about Ravi Zacharias' bogus claims in just sending him a simple email saying, hey, what's up with this? Were you a visiting scholar at Cambridge or weren't you? Did you really study quantum physics at Cambridge? Did you enroll or did you just audit? And what's with this bogus senior research fellow at Oxford University claim when it was purely an honorary position, et cetera, et cetera? These things are all listed there at the bottom of that video in the text field. And please, pr@rzim.org. Let them know that you're concerned and do it respectfully, and hopefully eventually they'll feel like, okay, we need to start saying, we need to set the record straight on this and maybe say a little bit of mea culpa kind of stuff, which is what I think the gentleman needs to do.
Now, I think it's fair to put a qualifier in there that if you can present, if you can document, if you can verify any of the things that we're calling into question, we're happy to correct the record on our end as well, right? If we're going to ask that of you, we're going to make sure that we're holding ourselves to the very same standard.
Absolutely. And just one final thing, if I may, Seth. Before, when I was researching the first issue about Ravi Zacharias, which is the visiting scholar at Cambridge claim, I told them, I don't want to publicize anything that's false. If I am wrong about this, please let me know now. And I've told them since then, if I'm wrong about anything that I've publicized, please tell me and I will remove the claim or I will post a big old mea culpa all over the video that I posted. And I just think the facts are too well established for them to deny, which is why they're adopting a strategy of ignoring them and hoping that someone like me will get tired and want to go back to other things and drop it. And we really don't want to let that happen. So again, pr@rzim.org. Ask them to explain.
Steve Boffman, thanks so much for bringing this to our attention. I think people are often asking, you know, what can I do? Well, I think I agree with the Ingersoll quote, the more false we destroy, the more room we make for the true. And if there's some falsehoods being perpetuated out there and propagated out there, you know, let's go out and knock those down so we can make more room on the playing field for what is true and accurate and verified. Thanks for your work. I'll make sure and include the links, and all my best, Steve.
Thank you very much, Seth, and thank you for your work.
Again, for anybody who is interested, if you want to watch the video of the exchange that Steve and I had, we've got some video clips from his channel and some other visuals. If you're interested, the video version of the interview is linked in the description box. I realize it's a slightly shorter show this week. I'm sure we'll make up for it next Tuesday as we do a broadcast about free speech called When to Punch a Nazi. And I'm already bracing myself for the backlash. If you have a perspective, the email is podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. And I will see you then. Have a wonderful week.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.